Today, on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about Hayao Miyazaki. Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Bashan. And like I said just a moment ago, we're going to talk about the legendary, I would say, animation film director, creator, Hayao Miyazaki, and to a lesser extent, Studio Ghibli, which I have heard recently somebody called Studio Ghibli the Disney of Japan. Is it the Disney of Japan? Oh, I'm getting a lot of weird looks from the gentleman in the room here, so we'll discuss that. As is typical for this podcast, I brought on a group of experts who feel they can speak with some authority about these given topics. Two of the experts are sitting here in the room with me. The first one was just recently on, and his name is...
Gavin Dunellen.
Welcome back, Gavin.
Thank you.
Two for two. Like, there you go. Yay!
I'm going for, like in bowling, like a turkey. That's right, right? I don't know. Sports.
We're not talking about bowling.
Good.
Sports, good. Sports.
So last time we had you on the Final Fantasy podcast.
Yes.
So let's bring it back a little bit to anime and Japan and whatnot. What type of films do you enjoy?
Films?
Yeah.
I guess I can cover a lot in terms of, I don't know, I guess I like a little bit of everything minus, like, horror, in terms of actual, like, movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any particular, like, important or favorite movies jump to mind?
Actually, Spirited Away, is actually in, I would say, probably my top five.
Oh, really?
Yes, I do. I think it's... Yes, it is. It's okay. A very well-done film. Yes.
Is that... Well, I'll ask you if that's your favorite. It's probably your favorite Miyazaki film, but... cool. Anything else we should know about you as a nerd?
I did live in Japan, actually, for 3 years.
Oh.
So I got a lot of interesting insight from... About Studio... Because I liked Studio Ghibli before. Unfortunately, I was never able to go to the museum, though, because you have to book it, like, months in advance.
There's a museum?
There's a museum, a Studio Ghibli museum.
Oh, cool.
And I could not get tickets every time I went to Tokyo.
All right, well, you just became your own outcast.
Oh, no. I'll see myself out.
Cool. Well, we'll talk more about all that in a moment. My next expert is also sitting here in the room with me, has also been to Japan, and his name is...
Joel Thompson.
Welcome back, Joel.
Thank you.
Last time you were on was Christmas episode, is that correct?
I think so, yes.
Okay. So, since we haven't heard from you in a while, what type of nerd are you?
Oh, my.
If you want to make it about
like
film,
a video game nerd.
Okay. Then...
There, yeah.
What about, like, film and cinema?
I suppose I would be a nerd. I've always enjoyed the game where you have to, like, link one actor to another, like, through movies.
Like Kevin Bacon?
You could, yeah, 6 degrees of seven of Kevin Bacon.
Kevin
seven
Bacon.
Bacon? Anyway.
Delicious.
I know, right? Bacon.
Cool. As far as Studio Ghibli goes, mm-hmm. How did you kind of come about this, then, if you're more of a gamer?
I have two friends, Gretchen and Joe, and they are the ones who introduced me to Hayao Miyazaki through My Neighbor Totoro. It was my first film that I watched.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. Well, hold on to your thoughts and feelings. We will get to this all in a quick moment. My next expert has been on before. He's over in New York, and his name is...
Tom Brown.
Welcome back, Tom.
Hello, Chris.
So, same questions to you, my friend. What type of nerd are you, and maybe specifically more geared towards film or animation or whatnot?
These days, I have been mostly a television nerd. I'm really enjoying TV. As far as anime, I mean, there's lots of anime that I've seen very recently because of Netflix and Funimation. I've been able to, you know, see a lot of stuff that's been recently released in the past year and a half, 2 years, which has been great. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but it's been really incredible, all the stuff. And the dubbing is great. I really like it. So I guess television is mostly my nerddom. And books. I like books as well.
Okay, cool. Well, hold on to your thoughts, sir. We will jump right into it very, very shortly. As is typical for my podcast, I've brought on an outcast, a pseudo-outcast. Let's just kind of clear that up right now. What is your name, my friend?
Hi, this is Pete Foose.
Welcome back, Pete.
Nice to be here, kind of.
So, Pete, I've gotta ask you. I know you, obviously, and I know you are a big movie guy. So yes. why is Studio Ghibli and Hayao Miyazaki kind of missing from your roster of, or history with film and animation?
Well, a lot of what I know of Japanese animation is what was promoted very publicly, usually through afternoon TV or through Cartoon Network. So the only exposure I had was to the really, really popular stuff, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Outlaw Star, and not really many movies. And so when it came to animation, I never went to the movie store, remember Blockbuster? And went to the anime section because I had no idea what I was looking for, and I didn't want to spend my money on what could be total crap, and so I stuck to... And so it became a gap in my movie knowledge, but the few I've seen are remarkable. I just, you know, tentative.
Okay, Pete. Well, what are some of your favorite films?
Favorite films? Shawshank Redemption, Doctor Strangelove, God, so many. Ben-Hur, like the big classics, Lawrence of Arabia, those are fantastic movies. And then you got it depends on the genre we're talking about. I'll stop there.
Okay. And as far as animation goes, are there any shows or movies that you really love?
Animation, a lot of it is American animation. I have a soft spot for Disney. Disney movies, they know how to hit me. Pixar does amazing, amazing things. Japanese animation, I got really into, Dragon Ball Z, Outlaw Star. The two movies I've seen of Miyazaki.
Okay, cool.
If I'm saying that right, which I'm probably not.
I think you're right. We're all judging you. I think you're saying it right. So
all right, excellent. I can't see everyone's faces, so I don't know if you're judging me.
Pete, as my pseudo outcast, you have the conch of outcasts, so you are able to interject at any time, ask any questions, or if you want to steer the conversation in a certain direction, you are welcome to do that.
Thank you.
I'm also in your boat, Pete. I have only seen a few of Miyazaki's films in Studio Ghibli's library, so I'm not really too much of an expert on this either. I actually don't know much about the man or the studio that brings us these films. I've only seen a few. I've seen Howl's Moving Castle and Princess Mononoke, which I love. But aside from that, I haven't seen too much. And as far as anime goes, I feel I have a pretty extensive list and love of anime, all the way back to Akira, to Dragon Ball Z, Full Metal Alchemist. So, yeah, I will admit it is sad that Studio Ghibli has not been on my anime forefront as much as it should be. You guys can judge. That's all right.
So you guys are outcasts simply by virtue of the fact that you have not been exposed to a lot of Hayao Miyazaki.
Correct. Joel correct. Here in the room.
Outcast through ignorance.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Joel attempted to instruct me in the ways of Miyazaki about 2 or 3 years ago, but we didn't get too far into the films.
We didn't?
Yeah, no. I know, right?
Failure is a friend. Good heavens.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, let's start the discussion. I'm going to throw out a question that I kind of want anyone who wants to take it to run with. Hayao Miyazaki, where did he come from? And is he the heart and soul of Studio Ghibli? Did he create the company? Or are these things separate? I don't really know too much about his history or the company. Can anybody speak to that if they can?
Yeah, he was Joel, maybe you know some... the better specifics, but he was an animator for another company, and a classic film which I've actually never seen, but it's Lupin the Third or Lupin Three. I've never seen it, but he ended up, like, he was a part of that one, and he ended up, it was something like he changed the ending or something. So basically he just started getting prominence of his own, and then he finally produced his own, started producing his own films. I think his first biggest one was Nausicaä. And I think from there, Ghibli formed. And I know he didn't make it alone. I'm a little loose on he was like the co-founder or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that was in 84, I think, Ghibli was founded.
Right? Yeah, it was in the 80s.
Valley of the Wind or something like that.
So the ending that he fixed was what he was working for was for like Gulliver's Travels to the Moon or something
was
like
that.
Was?
Oh yeah.
He said they did that, and then Nausicaa was like the first one of Studio Ghibli or Ghibli, however you would like to say it, that he put together. And then there is another guy who he works with. I'm not going to even try and pronounce this. Hashimoto, I think maybe it is, something like that. That he's formed the company with. Yeah, they're in the 80s, and Nausicaa was their first one. And they were with another company. Like, the company that they were working for helped fund to be able to create the studio to be able to do the movies. And then I think later on, either they split or Studio Ghibli absorbed that company.
Okay.
So.
Because we talked about Studio Ghibli does not... Is he the heart of the company, or do they do projects that he's not involved with?
They do projects he's not involved with, but I think he's pretty much the heart of it because his have been the successful ones.
Is it kind of like George Lucas and his studios, you know, where he has all the money and occasionally he'll direct, but mainly he just lets other people do it?
Hayato does most of them. He's got his hand.
Yeah, he's got his hand on most of them, and he does. I mean, wrote most of them, and then storyboarded most of them, drew most of them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, there is another director that his partner has done some as well, and has done some fantastic work. But most of the time, yeah, it's just Hayao is the one who's.
And like his son did one, and it didn't go well. Okay. The Tale of Earthsea.
Tales from the Earthsea.
Which is real weird.
What was his name? Goto? Goyo?
It's actually Goro.
Goro. That's right.
Yeah, like
Sorry.
The Mortal Kombat character.
Didn't want it to be that.
Nice.
Pretty much.
They had a strained relationship because Hayao didn't want his son to just follow in some sort of animation dynasty. He wanted him to go out and be successful on his own merits.
That is true. They weren't they weren't talking during that. So when they had given Goro the first... his first directing gig with Tales from the Earthsea, he and Hayao were not speaking. Not on speaking terms.
Aww.
Because of... Hayao didn't believe that he was ready for that.
That's why that movie was full of... It just felt like daddy issues.
I haven't seen that
Don't
one.
Don't you hate that?
Hmm. Yeah.
It did not.
I didn't see it.
I didn't know that he wrote most of his films.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
to animate a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I mean, and listen. Spirited Away is based on a girl he met.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. His friends.
And you don't have to animate much of the film in order for it to be entirely your artistic creation. I mean, like, you draw a few frames of a boar covered in worm demons, and then the animators get the idea. You still created it. You didn't have to draw every single scene.
Yeah, it's the same with any type of animation. Yeah. You have a one master director, like Brad Bird with, with Pixar Studios, with Invincibles and... so on and so forth, and Finding Nemo. He's a big-name director that they bring in. He's the big shot and cranks out amazing movies.
But I think the difference with Hayao is that he is, like, when it's his from start to finish, and only in his last couple of films has he allowed other animators to, like, come in most of the time, because he does it from start to finish. He writes it, he storyboards it, everything, every picture is his. I think, what was it? In one film, I think he went back and redid like 80 shots, or 80,000 shots. He redid 80,000 shots because he didn't like them or something.
I think it's Mononoke, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's doing less now because he's retired off of major films, but he's also like retired, like, he's very Cher in the fact that he keeps retiring and then, you know, doing another tour.
Six times is how many times
he's still
retired.
Working on something even now, like a samurai...
Yes, he's doing a samurai manga at the moment. Yeah, yes. Yeah. He's also a very good manga writer as well.
Oh, he does.
He's a passionate manga writer.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Was he
since the beginning?
Was he trained in animation? Like, did he go to school for?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so this was a passion.
I'm just letting you know. I just read this on Wikipedia today, so I could be wrong. But just so you know, he actually graduated from the university with. Political science and economics were his degrees.
Those were his degrees?
That makes
degrees.
Sense. In Japan, basically, you kind of go to college to do things that are financially bound, whether or not you stick with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions for my experts, actually, who have been to Japan. How is Miyazaki viewed in Japan? Is he as cherished there as we kind of cherish him here, or?
Oh, more.
Oh, yeah.
Way more.
He's also controversial, I've heard, as well.
Because he is controversial, yes.
Anti-war.
He's very anti-war, yes.
Comes across as anti-Japan, and people kind of pick him as a traitor.
Well, he's very... I mean, you can see it in the themes of most of his films. His films have a lot of context of government corruption versus, like, I guess, like, purity or youth.
Mm-hmm.
You see it, and one of my favorite things about the movie, this is one of the reasons I actually really like Howl's Moving Castle, is the fact that it's, like, not really ever even explained. It's just, like, in the background. There's, like, wars going on. And a lot of attacks on the environment.
What you're talking about with the... He was called a traitor. That was because he, in The Wind Rises, I think it is that he was very critical of the current prime minister's choice to change the constitution to allow Japan to go to war, basically. I think that's generally summing it up. Might be a little bit off.
And since World War II, that's been in their constitution.
Right, that's been in their constitution, that they will not use war as a way of doing anything. He was very critical for that, and yes, called a traitor.
Have you guys seen that movie, The Wind Rises?
I have, yes. Yes.
I love at the end of that movie, it's almost like a flippant little FU to his own country, Japan, when he's in this dream state with the Italian airplane designer, and he says,
"Well, it's a weird movie.
It's a very strange movie." He's like, "Well, that's what happens when you lose a war." And that's like kind of the end of the movie, and it's kind of to explain all of the pain and suffering he's gone through, all of the tragedy he's had to deal with. And he's a historical figure, the main character of that movie, which is also very interesting.
Wow, this is all very interesting. I didn't know he was called a traitor. That's so cool. I mean, it's not cool. I don't know.
It depends on who. I suppose you asked the question.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who love him forever.
Oh yeah,
he'll never stop.
I think he's very much. A lot of people would say he's kind of the Walt Disney of Japan, and I would think that he very much is that. I'm sorry. Gavin, I have been to the museum, to the Studio Ghibli Museum.
All right,
now
that's like a third reason why I need to leave. I'm just out.
But like even going in, the line was completely out the door.
Yes.
If he is loved by his Americans, he is loved by Japanese just as much. They love everything about it. There are Ghibli stores all over the place in Japan. Usually in any shopping mall close to it, there's probably a Ghibli store someplace.
Or a section.
Yeah.
I mean, my students all loved him, and that was the big thing with Earthsea. That's how I found out that he didn't do that one. It was because they all hated it, and they were like, well, it's because he didn't do it. And I was like, oh, okay. They like him a lot.
Is the museum hard to get into because it's steam-powered and it's walking around?
No. But if it was, that'd be cool. It would be so awesome.
It's an airship, so,
One question that popped up to me while we were talking about this. When did Studio Ghibli make its splash in America? When did it hit here? I remember personally seeing Princess Mononoke maybe back in 2004, maybe? And I remember...
I think it was Mononoke.
It was Mononoke.
Yeah.
It was
the
crossover. I saw it well before that. They released it on HBO, didn't they?
Oh, it's 97 Mononoke, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it came out in Japan in 97.
Right.
They didn't bring it over here for years.
Not that long. That was a pretty quick turnaround from Japan to here.
Was it only like 98 or 99?
I knew about Mononoke when I was in high school.
Okay.
Yeah, and '97 is when it was released, and because I know that, because it was the same year as Titanic, and '97, it was the top-grossing movie in Japan until Titanic, but it still won Japanese Academy Award.
That's true. It did.
Yep. I remember that. Like it was like, oh, we have Billy Bob Thornton and all these other big name actors. And I was like, oh wow, that's so cool.
And Neil Gaiman. Wrote the localization script.
That's right.
Yes,
that's right.
Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I think Neil Gaiman and Hayao Miyazaki have a lot in common.
Do you want to explore that real quick, Tom? How do you
a lot
think
of
they have a lot
themes,
of common?
I think are very similar. I think they both have, you know, first of all, I know Neil Gaiman takes a lot of his inspiration from Hayao Miyazaki films. He said so in interviews about Princess Mononoke. So I think there are themes of, like, you know, the spirit realms and the what else could be out there, the other realities. That is something they both explore very well.
The through the looking glass type stories.
And Lewis Carroll is both mentioned by both of them as one of their inspirations. Both these gentlemen.
I want to talk more about the themes in just a moment, but to bring it back to America. Princess Mononoke, was that his first big film released in America? Is that true?
I'm fairly certain it was. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that it was like after that that they gave us some of the earlier films in English form.
Yeah, Mononoke made it known, and then Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service, but those were both seen as kind of like small children films.
Yeah.
And then Spirited Away knocked it completely over.
Yeah.
Are his films released in theaters, or are they...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, my other outcast, how you doing over there? Yes.
I'm doing well. Whenever we get a chance, I'd love to talk about the two movies I've seen, because I love them. I really did.
Well, let's start with that. Which two movies did you see?
Well, I did see Princess Mononoke. I guess I saw it early on, and I loved it. And it was actually one of my introductions to Neil Gaiman, who is absolutely one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm. So I loved the entire story of it, and I loved everything about it. But it was, again, with the anime gap in my knowledge, it didn't stand out in my radar, and I didn't know how to find more of it. That's what always bugged me about this. Is I never knew enough about the culture to learn more about Miyazaki's movies in particular.
What was the other film you've seen?
Spirited Away, but that was the it was during the Oscar rush when it blew everything away at the Oscars. Mm. And everybody ran around with a copy of the movie. It's like, oh, have you seen it? You have to see this. And we all sat down, and I absolutely loved that movie. That movie was fantastic. And everything from the river spirit with all the garbage inside of him, and the no face or whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the train. Oh, the train was fantastic.
Love that part.
Oh my goodness, everything. The
incredible movie.
The endless buffet that turns her parents into pigs. It was, it's fantastic.
When I actually, my parents had never seen Spirited Away, and so I sat down with my mom to watch it. My mom was completely lost. Completely lost through the most of the film. I mean, we sat and finished it, and she was like, well, that was interesting by the end of it, but I think she was kind of lost.
But anyway. I think if you try to make sense of any of his films on every aspect to them, they're wildly confusing. But I think, like, the core stories of them are not. Like, Spirited Away, you know, it's a girl who gets lost and then more or less falls in love, but, like, comes into her own and then, you know, saves her parents and goes back home.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this whole mix of the back. Like, that's what I think is very interesting about his films, is I love how much goes on in the background that gets no explanation.
Mm-hmm. So what happens... So what are some of the calling cards of a Miyazaki film? Like, what are some of the common themes and, you know... Yeah, what are his tropes? And I want to start this off, because one thing I've noticed about Miyazaki films is... just weird kind of stuff happens. And nobody's necessarily on a particular quest. Like, there isn't necessarily a villain or anything like that. It's just kind of people just doing stuff in weird worlds. The one exception I would point to is maybe Princess Mononoke. But, like, My Neighbor Totoro, which I have seen a little bit of, you know, the girl's just hanging out, and she befriends a cat, or the little Totoro dude. Mm.
There's always some sort of element of war, some sort of element of government overreach, perhaps ecological destruction.
Oh, yes.
His themes are very, I mean, specifically those things. There's also, like, a children's aspect. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like C.S. Lewis kind of tried to pack really... intense subjects into children's themes. You know what I mean? Like, also Lewis Carroll. What's the guy's name? L. Frank Baum. Dr. Seuss. Like, these guys, they try to put something more deep, and yet it's for children at the same time.
Well, his main characters are almost always like someone who, like they're all like coming of age stories. That most mm-hmm. of them, they're all like in one way, shape, or form, someone growing up or accepting who they are in different ways. Like in Spirited Away is very directly. It's actually based off a little girl that a friend of his, their daughter, who he thought was very whiny but very interesting, and he developed the idea of this character who by the end she's very bold and strong. Mm-hmm. Even Howl's Moving Castle, which is a little bit of an older character, but at the same time she has no confidence, she thinks she's not worth anything, and by the end she saves everybody.
I love that movie so much. Her whole thing of going through, like, you know, she feels she's ugly and then she gets a curse where she's old looking, and then throughout the film as her emotions fluctuate that curse mm-hmm. fluctuates. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful and moving and a wonderful commentary. Also, feminism is another one of these themes. You get a lot of, like, women are very powerful beings from his movies, you know. You see that group of washerwomen in a few of his films. You know what I'm talking about, guys? The women who are in that room, the steam and the things wrapped around the kerchiefs on their head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They appear in a few of his films. I mean, he really, he loves women. And, you know, he, in real life, too. Like, he has given them great positions in his company. He's given them opportunities. He's a good guy for women's rights.
And I think one of the other big themes for his is it's really kind of like steampunk, really. Like, he does this very big blend, which actually kind of gives it almost like a Final Fantasy edge to me, in the sense that, like, there's a lot of heavy machinery, but then, like, within their own lives, everything's kind of simple, and that kind of cool clash.
I think there's always that, there's always the juxtaposition of nature mm-hmm. versus the economic drive or the industry. Industry versus nature is always another big thing of his.
Definitely. Yeah.
Which, just if I may go back to the previous point that we were talking about, Spirited Away did win the Academy Award for the Best Picture. However, Hayao Miyazaki was not there to accept the award because he specifically stated that he would not attend a country that is bombing Iraq currently.
Yep. Yeah, he wouldn't go.
So another reason why he was very anti-war. Mm-hmm. So
controversial figure. And we didn't even find that out until 2009.
That's true. All because of the wonderful John Lasseter.
Mm-hmm. When he came for Comic-Con.
Mm, yes.
Pete, I want to jump over to you.
Excellent. I did have a question, actually. A lot of the elements in Mononoke and Spirited Away and the bits I've seen in Howl's Moving Castle, do you think that culture, understanding Japanese culture in a part, is important to understanding a movie, particularly Spirited Away? Because there are elements there that I know about Japanese culture, but that a lot of people wouldn't. How the bathhouse works with the tokens and the chits and the and the whole how the afterlife functions as a home for spirits, not where people go when they die. That's understood in Spirited Away from a Japanese audience. They look at that and they understand that that's the world. But an American audience has to go through that stretch to believe that, and then go through the stretch that she's in the world, and then go through the stretch that she's changing the world. And it's almost asking too much of an ignorant American audience, you know?
I have a question, guys. Is it actually true that Japanese people are familiar with the world he created in Spirited Away? It was my understanding it was kind of his world.
He made up a lot of it.
Yeah, he based it on Japanese themes, but...
Well, the bathhouse is actually even based off a bathhouse that's in Taiwan. It's actually... It's a real bathhouse. I have some students now who've been there. And actually, the city they started in is also near Nagoya, so my students are very proud of that. I think a lot of it is actually very... I mean, I saw it for the first time when I was in college on my friend's computer screen before I had ever been to Japan. And a lot of... I think in seeing a lot of his films, I don't really think it's all that required. I think once I lived there and I saw them, some stuff did certainly make more sense. A lot of the ways that, like the parents reacted, and just some stuff I did notice. Actually, one of my favorite films that he's got, actually, that you do really need to, I think, be a little more familiar with Japan is My Neighbor the Yamadas, which is a very unknown mm-hmm. film of his, because it's in a very simple drawing style, and it's one of my favorite, and it's very... every time I watch it, I get a little sad and homesick for Japan because it's very, like, daily life in Japan. But I think...
Is it Yamada? Y-A-M-A-T-A?
Yamadas. Yeah. My neighbor, the Yamadas.
So you don't think...
No.
You don't think that you need to be Japanese to appreciate or, like the culture is not a roadblock?
There's nuances you notice.
I think there are nuances. I think that there are things that you miss...
Yes.
Because you may not be familiar with it, but I still think that that it certainly transcends. I mean, I know that we've, like, in the first part of Spirited Away, as you're watching it, occasionally the parents just seem harsh, exceedingly harsh to, what is her name?
Oh, the child. I don't know.
Chihiro.
Chihiro, thank you. But I think that I think that may be a little bit of a cultural thing. So there are cultural things there, mm-hmm. but still, I think that at least the underlying is something that you still get the underlying.
I mean, Howl's Moving Castle is actually based on a book from Europe,
actually not very good. I've read the book,
but there are other ones. I will say, The Wind Rises, mm-hmm. I saw with my boyfriend here, and I certainly understood more of it because that was more like a. How businessmen work, I guess, little bit. Like, some of them, I will say. But, yeah. Little aspects in and out. I guess, you understand it, but I guess nuances do click better.
Yeah.
But, Pete, I think that an aspect of these guys' films is that he's challenging his audiences. He's really asking you to go out on a long journey where no one else has gone before. And something else I wanted to say to both you and Chris was that in experiencing and enjoying a lot of Japanese culture yourselves, I feel like you have already been touched by Hayao Miyazaki because he's been so influential in Japan, throughout Japan. So a lot of the themes that you guys appreciate in anime, I feel like were kind of, spearheaded by this guy.
You're probably right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, we're all kind of the same age. We're all hovering around the same age. So I think it's easy for us to say his films, there is no like cultural barriers. I would be curious like what a 50-year-old thinks, or somebody older, if they would agree with our assessment of that or not. It's just a observation. I'm used to pretty strange stuff just growing up as a kid in the 80s who played video games. Like I was already mm-hmm. experiencing weird Japanese things, even if they were disguised through American censors, but yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah, I don't know.
I think when I showed Spirited Away to my mother, when she was done, she was interesting but yet confused. I think if I would have done My Neighbor Totoro, or
I'm just super sad.
Well, I don't know.
They die.
Has anyone seen Ponyo?
Now
they're dead at the end. I'm sorry, spoiler alert.
All right.
That's going to get into something completely different about whether they are dead or not.
Okay.
In that one, but something else. I mean, just something a little bit easier for her to have understood would have been a better gateway than what Spirited Away was.
Is Miyazaki in charge of dubbing or how his films are translated? Are they censored at all? Disney. Or
it's now Disney.
It's now Disney. He doesn't have any the dubbing and things like that in Japan. Yes, but here in the U.S., no, he doesn't. There's one. Was it? That was the last one I just watched. Was it maybe Princess Mononoke? Where? Toshio, who is the producer, was over here and helping with that. But when Princess Mononoke came over, Harvey Weinstein had, so the story goes, had wanted to know whether he could cut parts of it to make it not as long. Mm. And with Nausicaa, when they first redid it, they cut a lot of the things. But for Princess Mononoke, they actually sent him like an actual Japanese sword that said no cuts. And so now no film of theirs has been cut.
And side note for dubbing, Lauren Bacall was in
Castle. She's awesome.
She was Witch of the Waste, and Hayao loves her. So at the premiere here, he came, and he was terrified to meet her, and she was terrified to meet him, because they both were such fans of each other.
That's fantastic.
Tidbit. I'm done. That was my tidbit.
Yeah, I just know, like, certain other Japanese properties sometimes get really censored or heavily edited, or they'll just change things around to make it a mm-hmm. little more digestible to Western audiences. So
I think some of that does happen in the sense that, like, just some things don't translate. If you get your hands on some of the different DVDs and with the subtitles, if you pick just subtitle, and if you happen to listen to the English one, it won't match. Because mm-hmm. the subtitle will be, or the basic subtitle, subtitles for the Japanese is, and then if you switch it over, you'll notice that, like, they'll update the language, or they'll make it more palatable.
Mm-hmm. Localization.
Some words, like, words and phrases don't translate from language to language. And so sometimes you just have to rephrase them, and the grammatic structure alone.
Yeah. For my experts, do you prefer watching his films subtitled, or do you appreciate the dubs?
I personally just listen. I'd much rather hear it dubbed into English.
Me too. Just because the voice actors they get for them, yeah. except for Anna Paquin, are really good. Anna Paquin could not pick an accent in Laputa, which is kind of fun.
Mm. Japanese can be distracting.
She's like British and then not British. I don't know.
What were you saying, Tom?
I was just saying the Japanese can actually be distracting. And then having to read, you miss a lot of the visuals. It's a very visual forum, you know. You need to look. And now I'm reading. So
I've actually never watched it with the subtitle. I've always listened to the dub.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to watch anime on television, then it needs to be dubbed. Or not dubbed, but I'll do subtitles.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. It's odd like that, but anyway.
That's very strange. They're his, one and the same for me.
His films, I feel his films have a very distinct animation style. Like, I can tell mm-hmm, when I'm yes. watching a Miyazaki film, just like I can tell who Akira Toriyama drew.
His animation is exquisitely detailed. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no other animator I've ever seen that is so detailed. He really goes as far as you can go as an animator, explores everything that can be possible on one frame. He's amazing.
Do you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember, because I originally saw Spirited Away on my friend's computer, and then there was this old movie theater in my college town that was replaying it, so we went and watched it, and I remember just being slack-jawed at the part when she's in the water going up to the station.
Mm.
And the music there is phenomenal. I called dibs on sitting too. And watching with this with you. I have it. I own it. And so Chris is going to sit with me and watch this.
He animates the smoke of a cigarette yeah. so beautifully with such care and love that mm-hmm. you can't help but, like, watch it. You just... You can't watch these movies once either because there's mm-hmm. too much to see. Spirited Away, and there's just so much going on. I've seen that movie 4 or 5 times, and I have never seen everything. I can't. It's just so much going on. Mm-hmm. The music as well, yeah, is gorgeous.
We'll talk about the music. Because Princess Mononoke has great music too. There's a movie Akira, which kind of looks a yes. little bit like a Miyazaki film to me.
It reminds me of it, yeah.
Yeah, did they have crossover in talent or animators? Do you all know? I know
that's
he
a great
didn't.
Question.
I know he didn't.
No idea.
It's very violent. So.
No clue.
I have no idea on that one either.
All right.
I would imagine just in the business, people maybe move, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my experts, is there anything you want to talk about at this time? I've got a couple of other questions I want to throw out, but is there anything that we've mentioned that you want to focus a little bit more on? All right, let's talk about specific movies then. Which movie do you guys... we can't talk about his whole filmography. So each of my experts, you're going to get a moment here to bring up one of his films and kind of talk about it. So we only get to talk about 3 of his movies.
Oh, no.
Which sucks. Tom, you're the furthest away, so I'm going to let you start first. Which movie?
Let's all decide together because, you know, I might know one better than, or they might know one better than me. So I mean, of the 3, let's all decide together. What do you guys think? Spirited Away should be one. I think Howl's okay. Moving Castle should also be one.
Okay.
And then I guess Princess Mononoke, right? What else?
I think it depends. I mean, certain films, I mean, there's certain ones that are very different, like, Grave of the Fireflies mm-hmm. is such a different and was such a risky film. I think it's personally very interesting to talk about.
But that's not a Miyazaki, though.
No?
No. Uh-uh. That was done by his partner.
Was it?
Yep. He's the same... The guy who did Grave of the Fireflies is also the one who has done... it's the most recent one. It's the Princess...
I haven't seen the Kaguga.
Yes, okay. Princess
Kaguga. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that one.
How many films are in the Studio Ghibli library?
There's 20.
Okay. Well, Tom threw out Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, and Spirited Away. Is that all right? Can we do those three?
You know what? If you guys want to talk about a different one.
I do not like Mononoke.
Okay. Ooh,
I'll get hit with that one.
You know what? You guys mind
if I talk about Spirited Away, then I'll just talk about Spirited Away.
Do it, Tom.
All right. I'm sorry to make it so confusing. Okay. I love that movie. I think it's gorgeous. It, as you guys said, it won the, you know, best animated film in America in 2001. It's beautiful. I feel like it really mainstreamed Miyazaki as well, made everyone aware of him, if they weren't aware of him after Mononoke. My gosh, like you guys have already talked about some of the imagery that she sees in the spirit world. It's incredible. You kind of get the Animal Farm reference from the parents turning into pigs at the beginning. Because he's against capitalism, and I know Animal Farm and Orwell in general was of among his influences. I think it kind of captures a lot of what Miyazaki is about. Hmm. Does he go to... that's the one with the train, right? He goes on the train to see the twin... Sorry. What's her name?
Ryan. The twin of the witch, yes.
Yeah. Sorry. Goodness, never remember their
name. Chihiro
does.
Yeah. Side note to it, the reason why she's called Sen is because the Chi and Sen are the same kanji.
You realize I thought it was Sin, like
Sen.
Iniquity?
Sen means Sen, like S-E-N, it means thousand. Yeah.
Nope, didn't know that.
And then Chi is also that. So that's why when she takes the name out.
I want to rewatch every single Miyazaki film with you right next to me. I just want to sit there and be like, okay, what the crap is going on right now? Because I don't know what's going on right now. I'm into it. I'm into enjoying it right now. But what is it that I'm witnessing on this screen that happens all the time in a Miyazaki film? Which is kind of what I like about a lot of his stuff. It's so surprising. I'm exposed to so much. The intricate artwork of the machinery. I mean, the flight machinery that he creates, the Howl's Moving Castle. I mean, the intricacy of that thing moving around, and then when it gets disintegrated at the end, it just falls apart. Sorry, I'm talking about a different movie now. The animals,
God,
the demons.
The rules, Tom.
Sorry, I'm not obeying. Anyway, I'm done. Love Miyazaki. He's awesome.
So Spirited Away, did this one? This one best picture?
It did.
It's also the highest grossing movie in Japan ever.
Whoa. It beat Titanic from 1997.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
What do you guys, my experts here in the room, how do you respond to some of the stuff Tom said? Or is there something about Spirited Away you want to mention?
I think it's interesting that you see, again, it's nature versus capitalism or nature versus the industrial, where the dragon, the actual identity of the dragon, and who that actually is, and how that... I'm sorry, Peter, I'm going to ruin this for you. I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
You don't
find
out
it's a
dragon.
Right?
Yeah.
What?
But you don't...
Yeah, I saw Spirited
It's
Away.
Chris who didn't see Spirited.
Oh. Oh. It's okay.
I can ruin it for Chris. Nobody
it's okay. You just say the dragon.
The dragon ends up being this river spirit. Then the river spirit was... The river was filled in.
For some sort of evil capitalistic empire.
Yeah, by some sort of evil capitalistic empire.
It was made into a road.
Yeah, made into a road. And so that's why he's lost his way and he's not able to find, you know, who he actually is. Because his name has been stolen as well.
Right,
because
there's a whole theme about identity and the fact that the way that the witch controls them is by taking their names from them.
Yes, and they
and
forget
it's the
their
theme
names.
Of it is finding your identity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love the fact as well, the paper airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Or all the little stick people with spikes.
Yeah, there's so many things. And that movie and Totoro have my favorite character ever, which is the Makoto Kurosuke, which are the, which means black is black in Japanese.
But
it's little soot
balls.
Monsters.
Yes.
Yeah, I have one.
Sprites.
They're my favorite thing, and they eat a real candy from Japan. Like, it's just an actual candy that exists there. The things I love, the Spirited Away, like, some of the things about it, I think, that are just so remarkably done are the nuances and like the way that like in the beginning she moves so tentatively. Mm-hmm. There's this whole sequence where she's trying to go down this wooden set of stairs on the side of the building. And then if she were real, would have no facial bones when she falls. But she's going down them very slowly one by one. And then later on, when she, like an hour into the film, she goes down them again and she just runs. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up running across this piping, and she just, the way she moves in that sense.
There's often a female heroine in his movies.
Oh, most of the time there is, yeah.
It's very rare that it's actually...
Usually. Ponyo is the only example I can think of.
The Castle Across the Lego, I think, the Lupin 3, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah,
he has a male... Mm-hmm.
But there's a heroine as well who takes care of him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, after he gets shot.
The flight one has a man.
But yeah,
but it's usually
the Wind Rises does. Right. Yes.
It's usually a female.
But he has a female in that one as well.
He does. Yes,
a wife. His wife. He marries.
Yes, his wife. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
We mentioned. I kind of want to change gears. We mentioned Princess Mononoke is another film to throw a little focus on. Gavin, you do not like this.
I don't.
You don't like it, or it's your least favorite?
It might be one of my least favorite. Nausicaä, I'm not a big fan of, just because just the bug aspect, like there's just like an insect ass to it that's just bleh. I don't know, it's hard to say why I don't like it. It's just, I think, well, one of them, it's the part where the boar spirit, his stomach is cut, it's too well done. It's gross and I don't,
it's
like
disgusting.
Like,
I really don't like it.
I think that I don't know, I just don't care. Like, I didn't like it. Like, I was like, I don't, go away, Mononoke. I don't know, I didn't like it. It's just not one I liked. And I even tried rewatching it later. It's just not for me.
The boar with the worms, that imagery is always really stuck with me.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Trigonosis. Yeah.
All these animal gods bleed a lot. There's a lot of just, like, blood and god goo. All in this film.
God,
the repulsiveness of the old boar god is quite intricate. I mean, his grossness.
Pete, what'd you say?
No, I just like the phrase god goo. That was...
I mean, yeah, this film is definitely, you know, kind of man and modern machinery against nature. I mean, you have Iron Town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the aptly named Iron Town encroaching on the forest.
It's very heavy-handed art. It's very environment.
They're aiming to kill the god of the forest. I mean, specifically, in name. That's what they're trying to do.
I prefer Pompoko, which is the Tanuki movie, which is cute and dumb and also, like, boo man building over stuff. But it's so stupid that I love it.
This is also another one of his films with a man in the front, although you do have Princess Mononoke as the heroine. Mm-hmm. And I do like that within the first, like, 10 minutes, Prince Ashitaka gets cursed. And he's cursed throughout the rest of the film. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a dying, cursed man. Which I really like. That's your starting place, which I thought was really interesting. My other experts, those who don't hate the film.
I'm going to pet your cat.
Pet my cat.
Liked it. I enjoyed the movie. I mean... Yeah, I hear what you guys are saying, but, you know, the imagery is beautiful. Wait, I'm still confused what you didn't like about it. You just don't like, you have a visceral reaction to insects, right?
Oh, no, that's Nausicaä is the, well, I guess there's insects in this one. I don't know, I just don't like it. Yeah. I don't know, it's not, I think the style is different than the later ones. It's just,
you know,
it's just
Chris, absolutely... this is the movie that you introduced me to Miyazaki with. This is you showed us this in college, and I was like, oh, this guy. Interesting. And since then, I've looked at his other stuff.
I think the thing about Princess Mononoke for me is when I... Because you and I have watched it, Chris. You and I have watched it. And so I've seen it maybe 2 or 3 times. And I would say that I did not like it. Until I watched it again on Sunday. And that kind of changed my perspective about it. Because there was something that I understood more about it as well. It's certainly a loss of innocence that is very prominent in that. It's also a loss of innocence for Miyazaki himself, because there's all these things, you know, he's done Totoro, he has done Kiki's Delivery Service, he's done all fun films, and in this one, there is blood, there is gore, people lose limbs. I mean, it's a loss of innocence for both characters, it's a loss of innocence for him, and the idea of that... I think it was very well done. Again, yes, the imagery is there. Certainly the idea of there's that, you know, the boars are driven nearly to extinction in the film because they think that that's going to work. How, revenge. You know, how is that a reflection of things that we have done in society as well? There's a
really... I have a question. Go actually here. About this. Do you think that he took this many chances with the, you know, grotesque imagery and the harder hitting themes because it was the first one fully launched from the new studio, that they thought, let's swing for the fences and do something really out there?
Are these themes indeed shocking to Japanese people? I want to also ask.
The second one, I have no idea. Actually, I don't know about either one of those. It could have been, it could possibly be both of those. I don't really know if whether he, you know, he truly chose to, you know, go out there on a limb and really make it shocking, or I'm not honestly not sure.
I think in terms of, like, Japan, no, because, I mean, things like Akira had already come out by then. There's something called Ninja Scroll, if you've ever seen it. It's disgusting. There's a lot of, for every... like Japanese film or thing, they were like, oh, that's cute. There's a healthy handful that you're like, well, all right.
And sometimes it's cute and grotesque side by side in the same movie. It's like, right. How adorable. Limbs are being cut off now.
Yeah. So I do think that the reason it's as graphic as it is because it does drive its point. I'll give the film its credit that I think it's a very well done thing. It's just not my taste. Mm-hmm. Which, again, I'm falling on the knife. I don't like Star Wars. Sorry. This is why his girlfriend is my best friend. We both share this. It's not for me, but I will fully admit that it is one of maybe the most remarkable things ever created. Mm. Star Wars. So I think the grotesqueness is the fact that it is pile driving the point. Like, it is absolutely, like, we're not going to apologize. I'm going to make this an absolutely clear, you know, commentary on, and, you know, the environmental issues he's trying to bring up. And yeah, I think it's just, yeah, I mean, it's fearlessness. It's like, let's just go for it. I think it's what makes his film so strong, that they're not apologetic.
Piggybacking onto that, and I don't know if there's actually a connection or not, because I don't know when this information came out. There's a book called Flyboys by James Bradley, and it's about when George Bush and a bunch of other plane pilots were shot down over this island called Chichijima during World War II. And there is, in the book, it talks about how that the soldiers on this, the commanders basically, on this island, eventually, of the six guys that they had captured or whatever, they eventually got into cannibalism and ate part of their livers of these other, of the Americans, to be able to, you know, spirit or whatever, Bushido code and whatever else. And there's an interesting line when the prince has been taken out, he has, from Iron Town, and he's with Princess Mononoke, and the apes are attacking her, and the apes state that we want to eat him so that we'll gain his strength. And she asks them, well, when did your nature change because you've never eaten things, you've never been cannibals before? And I don't know when that information came out about from Flyboys, because it was, you know, it was done in a court-martial in 1946, I think, but it was not released. And so it's just a very interesting, now that I've read that book, there was a very interesting, what's the word I'm looking for? Connection, I felt,
parallel.
Like, between the two of them. Do what? I'm sorry?
Parallel, maybe?
Yes, a parallel between the two of them.
Man. Princess Mononoke really eschewed what I was going to expect from his films. Because, like, Joel, you mentioned, like, people's arms get blown off, a guy's head gets popped off, you see animals,
a couple of them,
dying left and right. Then I watched a bit of my neighbor Totoro, and nobody was dying.
Yeah.
There
well,
was no violence.
That's an argument.
Sure.
Those kids are dead. Those are dead children.
And every one of his movies kind of like has a bit of violence. I mean, again, Ponyo, there's war going on. The child, I cannot remember his name, little boy, his father is in the military and he's constantly communicating with him via Morse code with a light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, there's violence happening in that movie too, but it's clearly for children. I mean, only children will enjoy Ponyo, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah, just watch The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Same thing.
It's pretty much.
There's war in that?
Well, that's
true.
Nurture versus Nature.
Howl's Moving Castle.
Yay.
Which is about a guy named Howl and his moving castle.
Oh, okay. I get it.
This one I have seen. Yeah, I don't remember too much about it, though. Yeah, what do you guys want to say?
I have a question for everyone about the logistics of the door. I'm just so curious. It seems like that the fire demon in that little room was Calcifer? Always... Yeah. What was his name?
Calcifer.
He was always in the moving castle somewhere on the plains moving.
Yes.
Yet, the door would open on every location, and people could see inside the room.
Well, the door is enchanted to four different locations. Uh-huh. So one of the locations is where the castle actually is, which is where Sophie finds it mm-hmm. and ends up in there. And then one of the doors is one of the capitals that's at war, and the other door is the capital city of the other country that's at war.
Right.
And then the fourth door is the dark magic, or where the actual battle is happening. Yeah, the black door. Only he goes through. So the two doors, it's... Basically, what it is, it's how they don't really go into a lot of detail, which is one of the things, again, that I like about his films. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, magicians in this world are all, it's very X-Men. They're all under file. Like, they have to report in, the mutant registration code or whatever. So he doesn't want to fight. And so he has these personas in each country so that it seems like he's constantly moving. And it's a way for him to avoid them. And so if, when they...
Again, anti-war from...
Yes.
Oh, yes, very
and
much.
People can't get in. Like, when they knock, they've got to turn it. And they knock, and you hear them say which door it is. Like, oh, it's the...
Which capital it is.
And eventually when they break through, they realize that it's an empty, because it's an enchanted door. When they break into the building later on, it's just an empty space. They're all actually in this castle out in the wastes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the... I don't know what metaphor that is, but like the no man's land where no one goes out.
Right. It also affects the window, because you can also see out the window into the new location every single time.
Right, because it turns, so they can see it. And it's, what I also think is probably just how they sustain themselves with, food and money. It's because he sells stuff in each town, right?
Mm-hmm. I need to rewatch this movie with the idea that it's the X-Men.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have their identity. The wizards have their identity taken away. They literally lose their minds in service of the government and sacrifice themselves in kamikaze style to kill their enemies.
But it's also an interesting idea that at the very end of it, because Howl has either come forward or learned his lesson or whatever it is, that the... highest mage or whatever it is, basically says, okay, you can call off this stupid war. Because they were only trying to get, if I'm thinking correctly, they're only trying to get Howl, so it might be an interesting...
The war, actually, it's really hard to figure it out, and it's very... This is the one flaw in this movie, in my opinion. At the very end, they tell you why, if you pay attention to it, and they're going, oh, here's the prince we thought was kidnapped, which is the Scarecrow. And go, now you can call off the war.
I completely missed that. That's
because it's what? One line in the last 2 minutes of the film.
The prince turns back in.
Yeah, it's literally in the last 2 minutes of the film.
Wait, he gets kissed, right?
She kisses him, which means because he had to fall in love, which you're like, wait a minute, good what? And he God. Goes, now that I fell in love, I'm going to go back and tell the king. And they're like, well, now that we found him, let's end this war. And you're like, all right,
film. Womp, womp, womp.
Yeah. Like, there's
Stick
your bow.
Stick to demons getting gutted in the forest, personally. That's what I say. That's what you're good at.
Whatever, the kids are dead in Totoro.
So, favorite characters, which is a question some of you have been dreading. Gavin, I want to start with you. Is there, like, one character or creation of his that just, like, really stuck with you? Or you already mentioned the little...
Yes, I love the Makoto Kotosuke are my favorite things. In fact, actually, when I was in Japan for, like, 2,000 yen, it was, like, $20, I got this one that was, like... Do you ever see the Jumble Ball for kids? Like, the little thing that, like, little babies could chase around and it bounces? You put a battery in it. There's a Makoto Kotosuke one, and it just bounces around a house.
Oh my god, really?
Yes.
That's so awesome!
And I bought it, and it's amazing. for characters...
I feel everybody knows Totoro.
Yeah.
That's the logo for the company, too, right?
Yeah.
That's
I would say... this is tough. One of my favorite characters. Sophie, is probably absolutely one of my favorite. She's, that's the main girl in Howl's Moving Castle. I think she's absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about her?
Well, I love the fact that she's genuinely selfless, and that never changes. And, I mean, one of the faults about her is that she's so selfless and doesn't care about herself. Mm-hmm. And it's when she applies that while being selfless, but also being, like, seeing the value of herself is why that curse kind of goes on and off. Which is why I just think the character is so well done. And I actually will say, in the dubbed version, the voiceovers for that, the voice actress for that is, I can't remember who does it, is...
Beautiful.
It's amazing.
Is it Emily Blunt?
She's so good.
Maybe the young one, but the one who does the older voice. Too.
Both of them, they're all just absolutely
amazing. I do really like that one. I would say...
It's Billy Crystal is Calcifer, right?
He's Calcifer.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
I really do. I love those characters. And then in my neighbor, the Yamato, is actually, I just looked up, is not a Miyazaki. It's the other producer. It is a Ghibli film. I just love how, like, stupid those characters are. It's pretty fun. So yeah, I would say Sophie is probably my favorite.
Okay. Joel?
No, ask Tom first.
All right, I'll jump to Tom. Tom, do you have a favorite character or creation of his that you want to give a shout-out to?
Man. I mean, look, I really liked... I really liked Calcifer. That was a cool character. He was fun. I liked his whole premise. I like that world of having curses that you couldn't talk about. That seemed interesting. I'm still trying to think of what my favorite character is, to be honest.
You've talked a lot about the heroines.
Yeah, I feel like I've talked a lot about the characters I really like. And I really like the Howl's Moving Castle female. She's amazing, which you mentioned. Well, you know what? I'll talk about Ponyo because I did see that recently because I was, you know, preparing for this podcast. And I like the character of Ponyo, this little kind of shrimp creature that lives in the ocean with millions of sisters, but, you know, and their father is some god and their mother is some other goddess of the sea. And one of them escapes and goes off on an adventure and meets a little human boy and they become friends. And she gets a name by this little boy named Ponyo, you know, and she decides to develop an identity based on what she learns in this new world. And I thought this was fascinating. And she doesn't have legs and arms, and she grows them because she sees this little boy with legs and arms. And that was a beautiful story. I really enjoyed it. I know it's for children, but it was cute and imaginative and very much like many of his movies with amazing imagery and concepts of the waves moving and anthropomorphizing the water itself, you know, throughout the movie. I really enjoyed that movie. So shout out to Ponyo.
All right.
Be thankful her name wasn't Ham instead of Ponyo.
Was it almost? Oh, that's right. She does like ham a lot.
Yeah, she has an obsession with ham in that film.
It's the first thing she eats, so therefore she loves it the most.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There you go.
All right, Joel, you have to make a decision.
Okay, I'll make a decision. Favorite character is Calcifer.
Calcifer.
From Howl's Moving Castle. I love the castle as well in Howl's Moving Castle.
Do you like Calcifer because of the idea of the character or Billy Crystal's performance? Or both?
I think it's both. I mean, because there's a...
this is the living flame creature.
Right. But it's his heart. That's essentially, that's all of him. To sound cliche, he's the heart and soul of the whole thing. I mean, that's just what he is.
He literally is.
Yeah. So yeah, I would. I really like all of his flying, most of his flying. So any kind of flying contraption that he has created, Miyazaki has created, are always good.
I love the old lady in Castle in the Sky.
Oh, Castle in the Sky. That's it's Cloris Leachman who does the voice for her in the in Castle in the Sky. Oh my goodness. And then
is Castle in the Sky where the people with the little angel wings kept falling from the castle and they'd wake up and they had no memory. Is that, or am I thinking of a different anime?
It's the
one altogether?
It's like the robots up in the sky and the, they realize like it's a myth and they figure out that it's actually up there and they fly up there. Right. And, yeah.
Oh, so I am thinking, okay, I've seen most of that one then.
Just so you know as well, one we have not mentioned this evening as of yet is Porco Rosso.
No, I have not seen that.
There's another one you might want to watch.
It's so weird.
It is weird, but it's also Michael Keaton as the title character in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Calcifer would be my favorite.
All right. Pete, let me check in with you. How are you doing over there?
Well, I'd like to contribute my favorite character just from Spirited Away. It's the mud dragon that turns out to be the river spirit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That entire sequence from beginning to end, from the moment he shows up and everyone's running away from him.
Oh, the big stink demon, yeah.
The big stink demon or mud dragon whatever he is, the sloppy creature lumbering in. And the only one who gives him the time of day is our little heroine, and she has that little token that No Face gave her before, and yeah, it was just the whole sequence beginning to end, and you get the spirit at the end who's so grateful, and yeah, that's my favorite bit. That's my favorite character. It was magnificent.
Again, the symbolism of that. You've got a river spirit who's got so much crap stuck in him. Miyazaki's basically saying we pollute our rivers.
That is what it is.
Yeah, it's obviously pollution.
It's a bicycle.
Well, for
that
one, I heard it was a personal anecdote when they were when he was volunteering to clean up a river. There was a little bike handle sticking in the mud, and when they pulled on it, it turned out to be a full bicycle in the mud of the river.
Yep. There you go. Gross.
Is there anything his films do wrong, or anything that just annoys you about them across the board? Or yeah, obviously we all, at least
it's
my
clear
experts,
we don't generally in America like people who are very, you know, on a soapbox. And it's clear this guy feels very strongly about things. It doesn't bother me because I agree with him most of the time. But he really is heavy-handed with his perspective. But I don't think that's a criticism. I just think that's, you know, that's the way it is. So if you don't like his perspective, you won't enjoy his films.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I think, like, and I actually disagree with this, but I think a criticism people find with it is that because so much of it, like, so much is not explained, like in Howl's Moving Castle, like the war, or in Spirited Away, like all the spirits and the way all of that works. Each of the movies have all the stuff in the background, which I think is someone like my mom saw it, or you said like when your mom saw it, they're like, you know, then it'd be like, what the hell is going on? And it's, I love it because I feel like it's, you know, you don't need it. You're watching a snippet, but
we don't do that in American culture.
No.
Every single scene is meaningful to the plot in
an
American
movie.
Yes,
and everything has to be wrapped up and finished. I mean, it's the same thing, like, if you've ever watched, like, British sitcoms, like, they just stop. They don't ever necessarily solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And I think that draws a lot of criticism. And that's why I've had friends who don't like them, the films. Mm. They're like, I don't know what's going on. There's just too much happening.
Yeah.
When the actual base story is not that, it, you know.
It's a simple story.
Yeah.
Very simple. I want to turn my parents back from pigs. That's it.
Right. What a
and
simple
everything
idea.
Else is,
we've all been there.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Joel, what about you?
Any
like criticisms or any criticisms you've heard that you just want to trounce on or not?
No, I think the only thing I would honestly trounce on would be someone who called him called Miyazaki a traitor. Actually, mm-hmm. I really think that he has. Yeah. I would criticize someone who called him a traitor.
But people always do that when someone points out what you're doing wrong.
Yeah, he's very left-wing for Japan, and I feel like very similar things have happened with left-wing people here in America. Mm-hmm. Whenever you call out
your own country for its own problems, people call you a traitor. He right. loves Japan because he wants it to be better, but he's a traitor because he points out its problems.
Which is so interesting, because if you did any research on him, like, he was there, he survived firebombings during yeah. World War II.
Yeah.
And he was very well off because of what his dad did.
The Wind Rises feels spookily autobiographical when you watch that movie.
Oh, I think it's a little bit autobiographical, but it's also a swan song as well. I mean, so yes, I would really agree with you that it is. There are some things that are autobiographical about it, I would think.
Pete, you had a question you wanted to pose over there. Is that correct?
I did. I wanted to ask the experts, what is your least favorite Miyazaki movie and why?
Well, we kind of already know Gavin's.
Been there.
Yeah, that's actually why I wanted to ask. Thank you, Gavin.
You're welcome. I'm a trendsetter.
I guess, I mean, I've seen about six of his movies, so I guess I'll go with Castle of Cagliostro, Lupin the Third. I didn't hate it. I'm just saying it's my least favorite because I like his movies. I'm a fan of this guy. But it was kind of slow. And I don't know if anyone cares that I'm about to spoil this 1979 movie, but he gets shot like halfway through. And, you know, the lead character, you know, he's doing, you know, everything's so happy-go-lucky and cheerful. And then all of a sudden there's this huge dramatic shift from cheerful child's movie, flippant almost, to serious guy, just got shot. Now he's, you know, recovering in some random remote location, becoming, you know, a ninja, of course. You know, what you do when you're recovering from a bullet wound or whatever. And I didn't hate it, but I did fall asleep.
Are you saying, like, he Batmans this kind of thing?
He totally Batmans it. Okay, it's like, it wasn't 1979, I'd be like, you stole this from everything. But, you know, it's kind of an old movie, so it's like, okay, he didn't steal it. He kind of, okay, I mean, it's good. It's just boring.
Wait, that's not the Michael Keaton one, is it?
No. Lupin the Third.
Oh, okay.
Castle
it's
of Cagliostro.
It's the pre-Ghibli.
His first movie, I think. Yeah, it's pre-Ghibli.
Completely different style, too.
I don't hate it. It's very different animation style, though. It's completely
different.
So,
my hated ones?
They won't judge you.
I have a whole list of them over here, so I can figure out which ones.
That's what I keep making sure.
this kind of sucks. They're kind of like three of them. Well, not three of them. Like, the ones that I did not enjoy the most. Tales from the Earthsea, Ponyo, and The Secret World of Arrietty. They all came out, like, in... not consecutive years, but like 6, 8, and 10. But none of them were very... I don't know, I've watched them, but there was nothing really in about them that really...
Okay, I thought Tales of Earthsea was awful, but it's not... I mean, it's not his if you want to play that game.
Right.
Yeah. It just was not... It was just poorly written.
Yeah.
It was very, very poorly written.
It just didn't have that...
No.
That thing about... They were like, oh, wow, this is...
No, you're like, cool, it's done.
Yeah, it's watch it once. I don't need to see it again. Okay. I'm good.
Does that answer your question, Pete?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
I have a question for my experts, and I will start with you, Tom. Is there which two films would you recommend that we have to watch? You know, I've seen, Pete and I have both seen Princess Mononoke. And then, Pete, what was the other one you saw?
Spirited Away.
Okay.
I feel like you've seen Howl's Moving Castle, right, Chris?
I did. I don't remember very much about it.
Okay, well, you should see that. Okay. Right, Pete? You have not seen that? How's
it? In hearing you talking about it, no, I did not see that. I saw another one.
Well, I think the only ones that I would recommend for you guys both to see is that one. And for something completely different is The Wind Rises, which I think is his most recent film. And his most recent opportunity for him to say, I'm not making any more films, which he's done a few times. But so that was in 2013, I think, right? So see that one, but that's not going to be enjoyable. It's going to be more of a, wow, this is kind of an insight into Japanese culture, history. It is. It's kind of like an animated documentary with amazing imagery of his inner mind, you know, like he's...
I don't know, that does
you'd
sound
like it.
Quite enjoyable, actually.
You would like it, I think. I'm just saying it's not a delightful thing. Yeah. It's more of a, okay, I'm getting through this. Wow, amazing, beautiful, hard, not happy.
It doesn't have a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly downs.
It just kind of happens.
They're meanwhile losing a war, and he's being forced to work on military aircraft despite the fact that his passion is to just... fun, commercial, happy aircraft, peace-spreading aircraft with balloons and things. But he can't make that. He has to work for the Japanese government. So it's mostly sad. But I would still recommend it because it's amazing and beautiful. I don't recommend Ponyo. Howl's Moving Castle, you guys should see, and Wind Rises.
Okay. Joel, uh-huh. Gavin gets to go last this time, so.
Crap. Okay, Pete, what are the ones that you've seen?
Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away.
And you, Chris, you've seen?
Princess Mononoke, Howl.
And Howl's. Okay. I can't do this in two. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay.
My Neighbor Totoro. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just because it's the beginning of his career, it has a very different thing. You've already seen Princess Mononoke, but it's still one you need to see, I think. And then from there, I would honestly jump to. From Up on Poppy Hill, even though it's. He had something to do with it and didn't completely direct it. And then The Wind Rises. Because they're two separate different films. I think From Up on Poppy Hill talks about, like, it's 1963, right before, you know, Japan is emerging out of a new country, you know, as a new country and industrial out of the war and trying to change their image.
I've never seen it. Mm-hmm.
Of the atrocities they did during the war, which are severe.
Yeah.
So I think those four give you a very interesting taste of a lot of the different things. Like, Totoro is fun, happy, depending on how you look at it.
Dead children,
depending on, you know, whereas, and then Mononoke is very much, you know, transition and war. Up on Poppy Hill is how we get out of war and how do we kind of transition that as well. And then The Wind Rises, I think, is just gorgeous. Yeah. And then if you ever have a chance, only once, it would be Graveyard of the Fireflies.
I'll talk about it.
Yeah.
He, before we get to you, Gavin, there's just something that jumped to me, Joel, is Tom, you mentioned that he very much can get on his soapbox and he's, you know, he's got an opinion about stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't make that complaint. I'm just saying that could be an argument. Yeah.
Is his comments on the world, are they specifically aimed at Japan, or is he aiming at the world with most of his films?
No. All of humanity, but specifically Japan. I mean, okay.
I think he's just I don't think it's that he, for like The Wind Rises, I don't even know if it's really so much as he's just saying, like, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually, I guess, would lead into, that's what Grave of the Fireflies is as well. So Grave of the Fireflies actually was not his. I mean,
that's true, it's not.
No, he did help. I think he probably helped with it. But Grave of the Fireflies is about two children that basically get separated in World War II. And it goes downhill from there. Like, there's no...
They're brother and sister.
Yeah.
But then their parents die in a U.S. firebombing.
Well, the father, they don't know. The father's gone, okay. Presumed dead. The mother they get separated from, presumed dead.
Okay.
They end up with their aunt, who doesn't want to take care of them, so they eventually have to leave. The brother's trying to take care of the sister, and they're living in, like, a cave, literally. And then the sister has malnutrition, and she falls apart, and then he... And it's actually based on the god, the son, it wrote this. It's actually...
So it's a fanciful romp, is what you're saying.
Well, yes, it is. It is a delight. One of my favorite things about it is when the movie did come out, one of my good friends who's Japanese, like, they were... The daughter or the sister is obsessed with this candy. And he keeps, when he finds it, she has it, and she's, like, when he finds out she dies, the candy won't go in her, like, mouth. That's how he figures it out. And they were selling the candy in the lobby, and people who went to go see the movie didn't know it was a sad film. So my friend had the candy, and she was sitting like, oh, God. And then she was like, she cannot look at this candy now. And it's like their faces are, the little girl's face is on the tin.
Oh,
yeah.
That's atrocious.
It's really, it's grim.
I love it. It's funny. I would say my answer to this question, I guess, would be, of course, like Howl's and those ones we've been covering. Again, I would also piggyback with Totoro only because, like, it is just you need to see it for the foundation of who they are. I think Castle in the Sky is absolutely a wonderful film, too. Just the cast of characters in it is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a fun one to see. Again, Grave of the Fireflies is a movie that I think everyone should see just because I really do... I chalk it up there with like how everyone should see Schindler's List one time. Everyone should see Hotel Rwanda one time. American History X and Grave of the Fireflies are these movies that like I don't really. I would watch them again to make sure that someone I know watched them.
$1 million. Don't watch
it. And them. Grave of the Fireflies is that's an example of it because it's just how awful it was to be living in Japan during this time. And I think for me, like I had a student who lived in the outskirts of Hiroshima, who then I had a student who was my student. He was 90, and he would talk about how like he was like in his 80s or 90s, and he said that, like the American soldiers would come around and like originally would like give them gum, and like the American soldiers didn't want to be there either. He remembers that very distinctly, like because these were young men. I love like things about. Those perspectives we don't get to see a lot. A lot of things with war are always about the fighting and the battle itself, but this whole movie is just about these kids who are just literally trying to eat and failing. And this happened. This is based on this. And the point of it was that's why he did it. It was an unapologetic, mm-hmm. like slot. You know, I mean, it's the same thing why you make things like Schindler's List or Hotel Rwanda, and I just think it's a movie that everyone just needs to see. There's nothing to do with it even being a Ghibli film. I just think it's something you need to watch.
Piggyback onto that, I'm going to be show that I'm kind of a horrible person at this moment.
Right
now. When I was watching Graveyard of the Fireflies, and please don't have this thought process while you're watching it, because it was...
Which you're going
to
have
This is the reason why I need to rewatch it, because there was a part of me in my stupid American... you know, first world country where I can look up on the internet and get food from a damn grocery store and whatever else. I'm watching this, and occasionally, like, his sister is passing away from malnutrition, and I'm just like, why don't you just go back to the aunt? It's easy. Just go back to her. Yes, she's a complete and heinous bitch, but still, just go back to her, and you'll be fine. But they don't, and then the rest of the movie happens, and it's just like, and I need to rewatch it, because I am an ignorant asshole. Because that's something that... that was my thought process, and there was not a part of me... It might have been that there was a part of me that was guarding myself from the actual shit that was going on in the film. But there was a part of me that was like, I don't think that I allowed myself to be able to completely understand what was going on with that. Because I was like, just go... There's an outlet right here. And I was focusing on the outlet or trying to solve the problem instead of just... watching the film for what the film was trying to tell me.
Gavin, is this the one you called dibs on?
Hmm?
Is this the one you called dibs on with me?
Yes.
I used to watch?
Yeah.
Graveyard of the Fireflies?
No, Spirited Away.
Oh, Spirited Away.
Oh, very different. well, the other thing about the Grave of the Fireflies, it is an animation of a book called Grave of the Fireflies that is semi-autobiographical. Mm. And it was written by a man whose sister did die this way. From what I remember, I'm trying to actually make sure I'm checking my fact in that. But he did not.
Mm.
But in the film...
He does,
or something like that, just for the poignancy of it. So many spoilers. No, Spirited Away is the one I called.
Okay.
That dibs.
Oh.
We can watch... I mean, I can bring you Grave of the Fireflies and then come in here and, like, eat candy and enjoy life while you don't. kind of thing, like...
That's hilarious.
You know, it's like, I'll sit in the room.
We're running... pretty long at this point, so we slowly have to bring this discussion to a close. Any final thoughts you all want to say about Studio Ghibli or Hayao Miyazaki? You know, brief thoughts, ideally. So,
brief thoughts? Okay. See as many movies as you can. If you go to Tokyo, go ahead and go to the museum. Also, if you want to read something, there's starting
Wait,
point.
He has a museum?
What? I'm sorry?
There's a museum dedicated to them?
Yeah, there's a museum. There's a Studio Ghibli museum in Tokyo.
Oh,
so
cool.
If you ever get a chance to go to Tokyo... Go see that.
But order your tickets before you go.
Yes, order your tickets before you go. There's also two books. There's one called Starting Point and Turning Point. Both of those are essays written by Hayao about his journey as being an animator.
Oh, okay. I hear there's a documentary on Netflix.
Oh, there is!
What is that called?
I don't know if it's on Netflix, though. It's called The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness.
Uh-huh.
And it follows the story of... The Wind Rises and Princess Kaguya, which are the last two films that they just did before when Marnie was there.
Okay,
so
cool. Yeah. Gavin, Tom, any final thoughts?
I think one of the big things we would probably fill another hour discussing is the music to this movie.
Oh, we didn't talk about the music.
the music, and the problem is where I'm really ashamed of myself right now that I cannot think of his name.
Joe Higashi? Something like that. Hibachi?
But he, the music for this movie is, all of his movies, is just absolutely phenomenal, and the soundtrack to Spirited Away specifically is why I'm absolutely in love with that movie. And I actually even use it when I teach. When I have to do writing drills with my students, I play the music from these movies because it's like such a calming nature that my students produce better work. So yeah, that's my final thought. Like, nice. The music is phenomenal.
There will be plenty of his music obviously interjected in this podcast.
Excellent.
Tom, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, just to, you know, repeat. I mean, his artistry is phenomenal. He accepts nothing less than perfection in his works, and I mean, that's obvious when you look at the animation style, intricacy, attention to detail. He cares so much about his works. I mean, and he also lives in the same place in my mind that, you know, C.S. Lewis, Neil Gaiman, Jasper Ford, Lewis Carroll, Guillermo del Toro, Dr. Seuss, they all live in the same place in my brain, you know, like kind of children's authors, but also approaching really complicated subjects so that children aren't left to be ignorant, you know, watching bullcrap. And I appreciate that because, you know, I agree with them. Their points are often very valid, but also they're trying to do something really good with the information that they have. So I really appreciate Hayao Miyazaki a lot.
Well, gentlemen, with that, we have to bring our Hayao Miyazaki discussion to a close. At this time, does anybody have anything else that you're working on? Any shows, any websites, Twitter, whatever you wish to plug? Now is the time. Tom, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm in a reading right now of Our Mutual Friend, Charles Dickens, which is coming up in May. And then in June, I'm in a play at Theater for the New City, downtown Manhattan, of Pride and Prejudice. A musical. It's a new musical of Pride and Prejudice. So that's exciting. Also, because I really enjoy pimping out things that have nothing to do with me, I think everyone should go watch Black Dynamite. It's an animated series, and it is hysterical. It's Black Dynamite, like the character you're familiar with from the movie, only it's animated and it's hilarious. Everyone watch it. Black Dynamite.
Cool. Pete?
Nothing public, but I had a job interview today for a supervisor position, so that was neat.
Yeah, awesome.
Get there.
Yay. I think the last one make them money. Interview.
That's right.
Joel?
Nothing public. I put in a resume for a job that I have no experience in, but I've been at the company for long enough. We'll see what happens.
All right.
Woo. Yeah.
Hire from within.
Oh,
Gavin?
Yes. I am one half of a team with Chris's girlfriend called Chairs. We do improv here in Chicago. We're actually playing in the Chicago Improv Festival on the 25th and also next Tuesday. And we, you can check us out on Facebook, Improv Chairs. And she and I, we do our thing.
Nice. I will be in LA a week from today doing a show. This podcast will air after that show, so please check out the reviews. I hope that they are
which is on the same night as our show for Chicago Improv Festival. So check out what happens with us and how mad Melissa is that he's not here for it.
Yes. What else is going on? I'll be stepping into Bye Bye Liver here in Chicago as an understudy. So if you're in the Chicagoland area, head over to Public House Theater and you can catch
and
me.
Kneecap
one of the actors. Get me on stage. Also, if you are inclined to do so, check out Mortal Kombat 10. You may recognize some familiar movements of certain characters in that game. If you have any questions, comments, protests, topic suggestions, you can email them to nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming and discussing Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. I really want to watch like all 20 films now.
Good.
Mm-hmm. You did it. Good job. I've been your host, Chris Bashin, and joining me to talk about Studio Ghibli, Hayao Miyazaki, have been...
Joel Thompson.
Gavin Dunellen.
Tom Brown.
Peter Foose.
Thank you, and have a good evening.